ones we really think that when they have done that, really and truly vote for people whose job and money too. I think an extension of the parole would be the wise thing to do. Agency vision that every man that
the parole system officers who mostly small number of repentance is something like 2 to 5% the punishment or making it more than to walk idly around
feeling I am and just
within the prison walls for still
you in regard to the penitentiary of Multnomah I don't since I've been in there in the office I don't that the first offender I think he's always repeated but for 3 times said about reformation. I think that should be our ultimate goal. And if we were starting in a world in this statement, what we're contending with, like to reform. 4 times, a couple of old people, one about 4, the mother, and the father had the parents and brought them in. That one of these days we'll be blaming the kids. Maybe it's our fault, maybe the parents for ones. Our ultimate goal, hold up Olds and Kings. And
that's perfectly right, Mr. McCourt, but rather than the cause, I was disturbed when I read the article. We'll read this with interest. The member of the public no longer has to work this agency to members of the public a well-head thing. It's the police close the door after when we do this.
Mr. McCourt's statement, the repeaters, during the 4 years I was a member of the State Parole Board, we passed on more than 2,000 Oregon criminal cases, and the number of repeaters there was very small. Of course, that was for the state as a whole. I think also we overlook the fact that there is, even in our inadequate prison system, a great deal of rehabilitation going on. For example, some years ago, there was a very prominent radio man who was buried.
Well, it seems to me that we're pretty much helping after the horse is gone.
I can't agree with Mr. McCourt's statement, the repeaters. During the 4 years I was a member of the State Parole Board, we passed on more than 2,000 Oregon criminal cases, and the number of repeaters there was very small. Of course, that was for the state as a whole. I think also we overlook the fact that there is, even in our inadequate prison system, a great deal of rehabilitation going on. For example, some years ago, there was a very prominent radio man known as the Voice of Experience. He was a graduate of the Oregon State Penitentiary. O. Henry was a graduate, I believe, of the Texas Penitentiary. Some very prominent people in literature have been ex-convicts, such as John Bunyan, Oscar Wilde, and St. Paul. Those are just some of the more common persons who, commonly known persons, who have rehabilitated themselves in spite of an offense. And I think 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 that we should be careful that we are not pushing down when we should be lifting up. These people who have committed crimes, in many instances, are people of the type indicated by you, Mr. McCourt, people who come from broken homes. We should be working on the question of helping the broken home and helping to prevent that situation. And when a person does fall into error, we should be sure that all of the resources of the state, the psychiatry and the social service and all other 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 services, education, religion, and so forth, will be brought to bear so that that person will not again commit crime.
Mr. Johnson, O. Henry and the Voice of Experience are good examples of people who've been in the penitentiary, but don't forget Dillinger and Jesse James.
And on the other hand, what would stop, what is to handicap a man who goes to the penitentiary and pays his debt to society, comes out with the intention of going good and go down and give his name and address to the police department, is protected in the ordinance that they cannot give the name or information out to any other person. There is a state law that protects You're using the fact that the man's an ex-convict to stop him from getting a job, or for you're using it for the purpose of extortion. If a man's made up his mind to go good, he's nothing to worry about, because he gives his name and address to the police department where he's working. They've already, if he's in the penitentiary, they got his photograph and they got his fingerprints. So all he has to do is turn in his name, and if he goes straight, he's all well and good.
Well, on the other hand, it's more or less of a degrading experience to go down there and give the details of the crime. You not only require the name and address and where they're working, but he has to explain in detail the crime that he's committed, and every time he moves or anything like that, or every time he changes his job, he has to notify the police.
You think that would have bothered St. Paul, Mr. Chasuble?
Well, of course, St. Paul was a very remarkable man.
Mrs. Catlin?
Well, I think, Judge Bain, that the men you're speaking about, who wouldn't mind doing it, we don't possibly have to worry about. I think some of those men it would bother and disturb to the point that they'd be so disturbed they might go about doing some wrong things. But it's the men that you really and truly are worried about, and so are we, that I think wouldn't register. I think they'd find a way not to register. It would be one more thing they'd be doing. It would be against the law, and I think that's very damaging. I honestly don't think this law will work. I think if anybody who is convicted of this, breaking this kind of a law, can afford to put up a good defense, the law might not stand up. That, too, I think is not a very good experience for us.
Well, I'm not passing on the legality of the ordinance without seeing how it be drawn, and they have got a law passed in California, state law on sex offenders, but it was just passed in 1947, and so far there's been no case that anybody knows has been raised in this situation.
Have the other cities a better record, Mr. McCoy?
Well, I made a contact with the Seattle police, and they said they were having good results with it. Not that they were prosecuting people, but that the there weren't a great number of ex-convicts in their city that were there before. They were going around the outskirts and going someplace else, Spokane or Portland. And in Los Angeles, they're having a similar experience. They're not having the convictions. They're not using the law as you people might think it be used to harass these people. That was another thought, too. Supposing, as often happens, a crime is committed, and the police go out and they talk to these different people who have been in the penitentiary and they know living in the community. Now, somebody might be suspected as to some crime in some other place or here. If they're registered and they have some contact with them, it can be a protection to these fellows. They can prove their alibi, where they were, where they're living, what they're doing. Lots of times it can be an advantage to these fellows rather than a detriment.
It seems to me that you've indicated really the purpose of the law when you state that in these other cities that there are fewer people that come in. In other words, this is really a type of banishment. You impose such harsh conditions that instead of attempting to meet the problem of rehabilitation in this area, you are pushing it off onto some other city. I might say that while I'm not authorized to speak for the federal government, I understand that the federal authorities are very much opposed to this regulation. They feel that as to federal offenders, that the federal offender should not be required to go down there to the police, that they should, if they're under federal control, should be required to report to their own federal officials. And the basic difficulty of the thing is that you are sending down to people who are not specially trained in this type of work, these cases. If you're going to have parole supervision or something of that sort, then you should have specially trained people.
Well, Mr. Jocelyn, I don't know anything about the federal government, what their attitude might be. Any such exceptions necessary could be made as to their prisoners. But speaking about banishment, the point is that the other cities up and down the coast have such an ordinance. They're banishing them from their territory into ours. And at least it's a matter of banishment. We ought to break even with them.
Well, that
we
is
don't
a
want
confession.
Them all together in our city.
That is a confession of failure rather than a solution of the problem.
We'll have to leave it there. Much obliged, Mrs. Catlin and gentlemen. That will be all, Mr. Conrad.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris. And our thanks as well to the participants in tonight's discussion, Judge Bain, Mrs. Catlin, Mr. Joslin, and District Attorney McCourt. These broadcasts of the Portland Radio Forum, heard Tuesday evenings at 9:30, are another regular presentation in the public interest of station KEX. This is Westinghouse.
Conscious today of losing our liberties, where we're beginning to look a situation in the face whereby that, just because we need law and order doesn't mean that we have to have dictatorship. Plainly speaking, we view this thing. I think that the Highway Commission many times is confronted with the problem of having to work with the law that has passed them. And I know that the writing of this law is taken directly from the publication published 1943 by David R. Levin, and the words are word for word.
Thank you, Mr. Davies. Now, Mrs. Hefner, if you want to reply to Mr. Wyrick for a moment.
I just wanted to say to Mr. Wyrick that all people will seek a good restaurant such as Mr. Wyrick has, wherever it is situated, regardless if it's on a highway or on an alley. And you, if we had proper egress to find that restaurant, I assure him that nearly any person of my acquaintance would be most happy to find that restaurant.
You think he's not properly defending the hot dog stands?
No.
That's
I
not
think
for him
mostly,
to do.
Because he isn't in a class for the hot dog stands.
Thank you, Miss Hefner, for all of those remarks. But I've heard those remarks many a time from when they're talking about these freeways and highways that they want to root off these hot dogs and hamburger stands. They never mention the good places. Thank you for the...
Mr. Chairman, I would like to just interject one idea here. It seems up to present we've been talking mostly of these the thruway as a means of eliminating roadside businesses. I believe there are some very serious and very important other reasons for this type of legislation and for this type of highway construction, which I think should be considered. And whereas I don't claim to know exactly, Mr. Davies, why this particular law was passed, I do know that in general, so far as the thruway legislation and freeways, there are some very sound business, commercial, and economic reasons.
Definitely.
Why these highways are important. And I believe we should consider them. For example, we all know that traffic is increasing tremendously in this particular section of the state, of the country, since Oregon is increasing in population, second to only California in the nation. We know that there are very definite limits on what a highway lane will carry. And we know that when we have to, essentially, the thing we want to do is to move traffic. We want to move
our
vehicles.
Don't you agree, Mr. King, that what we need is more highways?
I agree that we need...
That we're short on highways.
We're short on highways, yes, sir. I think that we need, before we need anything, and possibly this is fundamental, we need a very thorough study and inventory and classification of our highway needs.
My point is this, that what we should do is construct new highways, not take our existing highways and attempt to make freeways out of them. We are short of highways, which we definitely are, then let's construct the type of highway that is really needed.
I agree with you there, Mr. Davies. I think that the essential thing to do is the thing that Oregon is now doing in this highway interim study, which is now underway, which will definitely make an attempt to get an inventory, to find out what our highway needs are. And I think that you people will be bought in on those things. We, as highway users, as roadside council people, will be
Don't you think that since 1937, they've attempted now three times to pass the law, and then on the fourth attempt, the law was passed? Don't you think that interim committee should have been appointed a number of years ago?
I agree with you on that. I do think so.
Does this interim committee intend to have a revision of the law so that it really fits our needs?
Well, it happened in California, and it has happened in other states. They have made recommendations. They have set up an entirely new program, and it's a very exhaustive one and very definitely calculated to attempt to make something to meet all needs.
Then there really is some hope for the man who owns a piece of property adjacent to a highway. Unbeknownst to him, this law has been passed, and in 2 or 3 years from now, or any time that they someone sees fit to, they drag out this law, and he finds that he has no use whatsoever of his abutting property other than to use it for agricultural purposes or to put the back door of his house to the highway, because he has no front entrance.
Oh, Mr. Davies, I really feel that it is more a question of information to the general public. In the East, where they do have throughways and expressways, they have turned out most satisfactorily. That throughway from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Pittsburgh is a marvelous thing. And you can travel along without any interruption or any danger of an accident, someone plowing into you. And yet, if you want to stop and go down into a village, you can do it and get your lunch or stay overnight or whatever you choose. And you have no conflict of traffic. It's a safety measure, Mr. Davies.
Now, that's true, Mrs. Hefner. This particular highway that you speak of is a privately owned, you're speaking of the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
How about the Merritt Parkway?
That's right.
That's a toll road also, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Privately owned. They were constructed primarily for throughways. They bought the property, and no man adjacent to there would have any more right going over the fence there than what they would in your backyard. Now, by the same token, here we're using public funds with which to construct these highways and build the highways. Now we're coming along and we're taking these old roads that have been used for years and years. My father rode a horse on a road that's between Oregon City and Molalla, that today the service station has a post at each end of its ingress and each side of its egress, allowing them so much footage. That was the road was started, and he used it 70 some years ago. So the point that I'm getting at is the fact that we're sort of on a bum steer on this thing here. We haven't got really to the basis of our troubles in the being able to handle traffic satisfactorily.
Well, don't you think take the Sexton Mountain Road down through southern Oregon? We're using 99 just the same, and yet it is being modernized, and it's becoming a perfectly marvelous highway.
It's a swell highway. I went down to Rogue River fishing down there, and I think that's really good.
I think one point Mr. Davies is making is that businesses and other adjacent culture to an existing highway has a certain right by law. Mr. Chairman will correct me if I'm wrong on this, has a certain right accrued by law.
Oh, no, I shan't. Don't get me into this.
You're supposed to be a lawyer, an expert, or something around here. But the point I'm trying to get at is that when you have a highway that has been in existence, the people alongside have a certain right by virtue of the fact that it has been in existence for some time. Therefore, you are objecting to anything which tends to restrict that right from the standpoint of doing yourself damage.
Folks, if I may, I'd like to break in at that point to call attention to one provision of the statute. I wonder if it has been considered as a possible danger to those people. Existing highways may be designated as throughways if there are fewer than 10 commercial businesses abutting on them, catering to the motoring public in any 1 mile. That is that section, which is section 4, is that definite enough to protect one from the arbitrary say-so of a highway commissioner?
Wasn't that written? That was written because already we had a certain number of businesses, and those people objected so strenuously to a throughway that was only realizing the immediate need.
True, but suppose you had 9. Nine hot dog stands, Mr. Wyrick, and an undertaking establishment. Now, you might say the undertaking establishment caters to the motoring public, but would it not be open to to a person arbitrarily to say, I find there are only 9 in this mile, therefore out she goes.
We've checked that on some highways, and that 8 to a mile...
10.
10 to a mile, it doesn't stand up very good. It will in some small communities, but when you get out on the highways, it just doesn't work out.
Here's one question I would like to ask. The highway department or certain ones have been 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 trying to get this law through for trying to get this law through for of the amount of ingress and egress that's permitted to any bay. Hasn't the ingress at such places as Multnomah Falls, the Oregon City Falls, where they have 400 or 500 feet of continuous ingress and egress with no restrictions whatsoever. Now we're asking unknown, unacquainted tourists in our states here, unfamiliar with our laws, to cross traffic and go into these places here. Yet the highway department, to my knowledge, has never erected, in any one that I've seen, limited ingress nor egress to any of these vantage points.
Don't you think that will be done during this coming 1948 season, Mr.
Davies?
I think
it should have been done, started in 1937 when they were paving these things.
Law didn't permit at that time.
The law permitted the state highway department to do any of those things on their own right-of-ways. They have had the power to buy 100 feet, 500 feet, 600 feet, or any amounts that they might want to buy. Many of those places were given to them.
Mr. King, did you people have to do with the statute passed at the former session, which Chapter 493, that is, which declares the ocean shore to be a public highway? And if so, I wonder if you think it possible that under this statute, the ocean shore could be declared a throughway, and the people in Manzanita would have to go to Tillamook to get down to dig in the sand.
I'm afraid all I can say on that, Mr. Chairman, is that at least from the west side, it's definitely a limited access highway. I wouldn't know too much about it outside of that, I'm afraid.
Getting back to the statute, I would like to call your attention to Section 10, if I may. That is giving the commission power to acquire an entire lot, block, or tract of land, if in its discretion. By so doing, the interests of the owner and the state will be best served, and here's the proviso, even though all of it is not immediately needed for the highway.
I would like to answer
that. Is there any limit to that?
I would like to answer that, Mr. Ferris. Suppose we'll say that it cuts through a man's farm or through his residence or through any property he might have. The Highway Commission have the right to buy that entire farm tract of land. And in that way, they could use it for future development if they saw fit. But let me ask you this question here, Mr. King. Why doesn't the Highway Department return back those portions of land which they have cut off from the highway by eliminating turns? Many times there's 2, 3, 4, 5 acres in a plot of ground. Why don't they return those back to the original, put them on the tax rolls? In Clackamas County, I happen to know that over 50% of the land in Clackamas County is either county, state, or federally owned and is not paying school tax, fire tax, or any of the other accessory taxes.
Any comment, Mr. King?
I would be personally and very much in favor of an action whereby the State Highway Commission should be permitted to, I think, sell back the land at any rate. And I think the purchaser should have the same right on his price that the Highway Commission has on his original price when he buys this.
That's right. It was donated.
A reasonable adjustment of the price there, particularly where the land is not damaged in any way, or there's none of these intersecting roads where he can't use it. If he can use it to advantage, I would be very hardly in favor.
And Mrs. Hefner could beautify those.
Well, in some cases, you remember, just the last meeting of the Highway Commission, we are promised that we will have state picnic areas along the highways, and beginning in 1948, and with from 1 to 3 picnic tables and benches. So maybe we can use some of those places
well,
in that
someday,
way.
Someday, maybe the taxpayers of the state of Oregon will realize this highway deal is not exactly a picnic deal, because we're growing at such a rapid rate, our traffic is increasing, and our highway funds are very much limited, and we have to make the most of it.
All the more reason, then, that we should have throughways for safety and for the traveling public.
And I would like to keep emphasizing the point that the type of study which is now underway is the thing that we need in this state above all else to definitely determine on intelligent and scientific grounds the needs of our highways, so that if we really need a throughway, we're going to have it. If we don't...
Mr. Wyrick, I hope the highway commissioners continue to eat at your restaurant. That's all we have time for. That will be all, Mr.
Thank
Conrad.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ferris. And our thanks as well to tonight's participants, Mrs. Daniel Hefner, Mr. W.J. Davies, Mr. Sid King, and Mr. Bob Wyrick. This series of forum discussions, a regular Tuesday evening feature on this station, is another presentation in the public interest of station KEX. And now stay tuned to this station for latest news on flood conditions by Lawson McCall. This is Westinghouse.